Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Now, this is a fact that you might not know. Malaysia is ranked 12th in the world for biodiversity. This is according to the National Biodiversity Index. But it's also home to more than 1,000 threatened species of plants and animals, according to the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Now, to help me understand the complex nature of the issues behind these startling facts is Ahimsa Campos Ethes. He's a professor at the School of Environmental and Geographical Sciences at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Thank you so much, Ahimsa, for being here. You are also part of something called the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants. It's an initiative. MEME, is that there? And because of you, and MEME, I was out in Ulu Muda, which is a forest reserve in Kedah, as you all know, and you took us there. And I want you to ask you why you took me and a bunch of other journalists to Ulu Muda. I mean, what does Ulu Muda as a reserve represent?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for having me. It's a big pleasure to be here. And it was not only MEME, it was also MEME and Water Watch Penang that we both together took you to Ulu Muda. So in Ulu Muda is a fantastic forest. It's one of the most important forests in Southeast Asia, and it's about 1,600 square kilometers of tropical rainforest in Kedah, in the northwest of Peninsula Malaysia. And we took you there because we think it's really important to bring Ulu Muda to people, for people to be aware of this fantastic forest we have, and because we think that it's important to promote its protection as a conservation area.
Right, so it wasn't to bring hordes of tourists there, was it? I mean, we were very lucky to go there, but you don't really want to see more and more people encroaching in the area, do you?
Well, it has to be done in a very sustainable way. So then we need tourism. I think it's a positive thing, but it has to be done in small numbers, very carefully. The place is sensitive, so then we cannot have mass tourists. We cannot have people coming in big numbers to take selfies. It's a place to go, to immerse in the forest, to experience the forest. And that requires very small numbers.
Right. In fact, we were also put up at Earth Lodge, which is eco-tourism space. And when I spoke to the person who runs it, he said to me he was hoping for an optimum of something like 20 visitors a month, which seems very modest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it gives you a sense of how much impact human beings have on these habitats, and perhaps why we don't want too many people. But okay, let's talk about how Ulu Muda developed. Why do we have this amazing space, and why does it seem like so many of us actually don't know where it is? I didn't know until I went.
Yeah. It's very interesting how people don't know about Ulu Muda. And we ran some surveys in the north, in Kedah, Penang, and Perlis. And very few people, less than one third of people, have ever heard about Ulu Muda. So then, clearly, people are not aware of the natural resources and the biodiversity of this country. And why we have Ulu Muda is because Peninsula Malaysia used to be all forest. If we go back 100 years in time, 80% of the peninsula was forest. So in this time, we had a lot of development, which I think in general has been a positive thing. But the consequence that many of our landscapes were transformed from forest into urban areas, plantations, and other things. And what we have now is the leftover. We have now in Peninsula Malaysia something less than 38% of forest cover. And we are now trying to identify those good forest areas that remain in order to get protection for the long term. So to make sure that there is no further development in these areas that doesn't compromise its protection.
Right. I mean, one of the things you mentioned, a Water Watch Penang, and part of the reason I understand that they were there was because Ulu Muda and its reservoirs represent a catchment area for water that goes to Perlis, Kedah, and Penang.
Yeah.
Extraordinarily important to their water management systems, right?
Yeah, much of the forest that we have now in Peninsula Malaysia is because of water catchment areas. In the case of Ulu Muda, it's the main catchment area for these three states. It provides about 97% of the water in Kedah and something like 80% of the water in Penang. So it's really important for water provision. And this goes for domestic use, it goes for the production of paddy, for rice, and also for industrial use in the industrial park areas in the north. So really, this forest provides what we call ecosystem services. It's a free service that we obtain from the forest.
Right. The question is, and maybe this is the reason also to bring journalists, is there an issue around threats to this area? You know, and if they are, where are they coming from?
Yeah, there are several threats. The main one is logging, and particularly unsustainable logging. So logging happens in many forest reserves in Malaysia, and right now Ulu Muda, or the Greater Ulu Muda, is five different forest reserves. And until 2018, logging was happening. And logging is always difficult to control. It can be a bit sustainable. And we know that logging leads to runoff, to soil erosion, and this compromises the water. So then the water that people get later downstream in the houses or in for the agriculture will be full of sediments, and it requires a lot of treatment that is much more expensive. The quality is much, much worse. Also, with the runoff, we get things like floods. You know, the forest is less able to contain the water. When you have a big rain, all the water just floods very, very fast, and then you get all these incidents in which suddenly you have, you know, big flooded areas or even droughts because the forest doesn't retain the water in the same way. So,
but people might ask, Ahimsa, I mean, if it's a forest reserve, what are loggers doing there? I mean, many of us don't understand what a forest reserve is.
Correct. No, that's the role of forest reserves. So basically, forest reserves, they're mainly for production. That means for logging. So that is the nature purpose, natural purpose of the forest reserves. What we are advocating for is to move from a forest reserve into a state park, into a place that there is no logging. So I think logging has to happen somewhere. We use timber, so we need to produce timber, but it has to be in a sustainable way, and we need to choose where we do our timber production. I think Ulu Muda is too important as to be producing timber nowadays.
Right, okay, so a state park will protect the habitat. How fragile is this habitat?
So the habitat is fragile. You know, forest is a very complex ecosystem, and it's fragile. And we're talking before about logging. We also have a lot of poaching that affects wildlife. And we have a very serious poaching crisis in Southeast Asia, including Malaysia. And also we have other things like, for example, unsustainable ecotourism, if it's not well designed, and some new potential threats, including climate change and including the Belt and Road Initiative that is going to be passing in through that part of Malaysia. So then there are many threats lurking over this forest. And if we were able to have a state park, it would be much better protected in the long term. So then logging will not be permitted. There will be many more resources and much more serious enforcement for kind of patrolling and to protect against poaching. And all the ecotourism and interest in the forest will be much more regulated and controlled. So I think it will bring a lot of benefits to the conservation of the place.
Right. So the aim of this campaign is, in fact, to promote the idea of a state park,
yeah,
okay, for the Greater Ulu Muda.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to come back and have a look at something that's very close to your heart, elephants. Elephants in the next part of Let's Talk. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, my guest, Professor Ahimsa Campos Athias. He is with the School of Environmental and Geographical Sciences at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. We're talking about the Greater Ulu Muda and some of the wonders in it. I was there recently with him and a group of journalists, and this is a bit of shaky footage I shot when we were at a clearing called Cherok Nye. Take a look.
Have I heard? A family of females, six. We have at least three adults and three young. And there's a big male behind them. And as you can see, the females are not staying. They're not waiting for the male. They're moving ahead. So probably they're not very comfortable with the male being around. So the male is not part of the group. The male will just join sometimes and spend some time with them trying to mount some of the females. So the females will often reject them, or sometimes if they are available and they like him, they will accept.
Well, that was a view of, I think, three adult elephants, three juveniles at Cherok Nye in Ulu Muda Reserve. It's an extraordinary scene for somebody like me because, you know, as a city dweller, I don't encounter elephants very often. You perhaps do because you're an elephant expert. Tell us about that, and then take us to the scene. What is it that we were seeing, Ahimsa, in this extraordinary, because we were so lucky. It was day one, wasn't it?
Yeah, we're very lucky. So then we spent there 3 days, and we saw three elephant groups. That's very unlikely in the tropical rainforest. We normally tell people, don't expect to see elephants. You will see the dung, the footprints, But this time it were very, very
late. Yeah, we did encounter a lot of dung, I must say. I was very happy for that, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what we saw is three females with the calves. I guess each calf will be from one of the different females. So they are a family group. I don't know if this is the full group. Probably it is, which is a relatively small group. They can be a bit larger. And these elephants were a bit stressed. They were being chased by a male in mast. So then males in mast can be a bit aggressive, a bit bully, and then I guess he was checking for the females, and then the females were moving quite fast. And you can see how the calves are moving. They're hiding among the females. They're getting, you know, in front of them, hiding from the male. And we assumed they were moving towards the Menelik, so they were moving in that direction, and we encountered them a bit later. It was a lovely scene, it was very, very interesting.
Right, so one of the things I did not know, and I clearly don't know much about elephants, and I learned much on the trip, which is that the herds are female-led, and you have a grandmother, and you have their daughters, and then their offspring, male or female. Why? I mean, what's that? Where does that come from, this this kinship system, as it were, for elephants?
Well, elephants are really, you know, extraordinary animals. They're very interesting. And they live in this kind of matrilineal societies, which is very female-dominated. So then we have two type of kind of social structures. One is the female groups, and one is the bulls or the males. The bulls tend to be alone or in very loose kind of coalition with other bulls. And the females live in these family groups, herds. And what you have is always several, you know, all females, like the matriarch or several old individuals, and then the mothers, and then the daughters. And you also have the juvenile bulls with them. And there's a lot of exchange of information. They take care of each other. It's very much like a family. It's an extended family. And they depend on each other. They really live together. The matriarch will convey information to the next generation that will come into the next generation, like, where do you go to drink water if there's a drought? So then the female remembers, you know, 30 years ago I went to this place. And there's evidence of females teaching these kind of things to the daughters. So it's a very interesting society in which they have very complex communication. Elephants can communicate in different ways. And they have very interesting emotions and interactions. They're very sentient animals.
Right, so that was the point that you were making also during this trip, that they were both intelligent and sentient. We know a lot of animals are intelligent, but they're not necessarily sentient in quite this way. We know that some Orang Asli communities confer personhood on elephants. Yeah. Is that just sentimentality? Are we projecting human thinking or primate thinking, as you kept calling it, onto elephants, or do they really deserve this?
Well, I think they are extremely intelligent and sentient. So I think in that sense, we need to be very aware that not only humans, not only great apes are able to have these kind of complex emotions. So I think definitely elephants, together with cetaceans, dolphins and whales, and of course the primates, they have these complex societies and complex emotions. And I think we need to be very aware of that when we make our decisions. It's not these animals care and feel and can enjoy and can also suffer. So then it's very interesting, some examples when a new calf is being born in a group, you can see excitement and emotion from the females. Not from the mother, but from the aunties and the cousins, and they get excited about that. That's pretty unique. And also we know that they mourn the death. So then when an individual dies, we know that the groups can come and they can mourn even long time later. You know, months and months after the animal was dead, they will come to the same place, and they have behaviors that suggest sadness.
Okay, we could clearly go on, and you could for hours about elephants. I do want to ask you this: how many elephants do we have in the wild and all domesticated, or not domesticated, but in captivity, as it were?
Well, knowing how many elephants is always difficult, or how many tigers, so we play with guesstimates. And we estimate around 40,000 wild Asian elephants. 40,000.
Wild Asian elephants, beyond the boundaries of Malaysia?
In the whole of Asia. And within Malaysia, we are playing with a number of around 3,500 between Peninsula and Borneo, and maybe around 1,500 here in Peninsula, Malaysia.
I mean, that's extraordinary. I mean, I wouldn't have believed it until I saw it myself. Now, of course, The question, of course, is how important are elephants to the habitat? So we're talking about the greater Ulu Muda.
Yeah.
Do they need elephants? If we took all the elephants out of it, would it still be okay?
Yeah. Well, it depends what we call okay, but definitely elephants are very important for ecosystems, for the ecological function they play. We like to call them the mega gardeners of the forest, the mega fauna, and then they're really like gardeners. They do things like pruning and you know, cutting the trees when they feed, they break down branches, and they really, you have seen, they make a big mess when they feed. It's quite interesting. They also, they plant seeds, so they eat fruits, move around, defecate the seeds, and these seeds germinate. So they are the ones who are helping the regeneration of the trees, and even the fertilize. You know, the movement, when they move around and defecate, they're moving a lot of nutrients in ways that are very interesting that we are beginning to understand right now. So then, in the absence of elephants in the forest changed a lot. Changed in terms of the density of plants, the forest structure, the forest composition, the biodiversity. So we think that to conserve forests, we need elephants. We need forests to conserve elephants, but also the other way around. We need elephants to conserve the forest.
Right, wonderful. Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be back to look at the complex question of conservation in Malaysia. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad. With me, Himsa. He is a professor of, many things, and elephants. He's a professor of elephants at the School of Environmental and Geographical Sciences at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. We're talking about conservation, yeah. Right? And you were saying how elephants are important to the jungle, and it's a symbiotic relationship. Now, the question is, why aren't we conserving this? Why haven't we upgraded Ulu Muda, the greater Ulu Muda, to a state park? And what's your thinking about this?
Yeah, when I look at the general context in Malaysia, for me it's a bit of an anachronism, the fact that places like Ulu Muda are not protected. So then Malaysia is a very rich country. If you see how is the economy in general in Kuala Lumpur, where we are right now, or in general in the country has become very rich economically. And we haven't really reached that point in terms of our conservation, particularly when it comes to formal protection of a forest. And I think it is mainly a matter of less care for conservation in general, but also in terms of small loopholes and small barriers in our governance system. So I think that's something we need to discuss. So why Ulu Muda is not a state park yet? I guess because the constitution says that the land is a state matter, but things like elephants are a federal matter, and then...
Elephants are a federal matter?
Elephants are federal, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, they are...
Wildlife is federal.
Well, wildlife is actually, it is joint. It's part of the joint area, but elephants are the Prehelita that are a federal agency. So I think the key point is that the states need to produce revenue, which they produce often through things like logging or mining, and they need the land, they need the natural resources. So then for the states to stop logging, they say, well, where do I get my income from? How do I compensate for the lack of income? And I think at the end of the day, everything comes to this, how we can compensate the state for the money that they were doing before from logging.
Right, okay. Now, you've been in Malaysia for 8 years now, you worked at the university, you engaged with all kinds of stakeholders. Is there a consensus about, or an evolving consensus about the way we deal with the wildlife and their habitats?
Well, there is the consensus that we are not putting enough efforts in general, not only in Malaysia, globally, but I think Malaysia is a very good example, because Malaysia, for me, is going to be the last stronghold of wildlife in Southeast Asia. I think if somewhere we can and we should be doing good conservation in Southeast Asia, that is Malaysia. But even though we are very behind what we should, right? So in terms of the amount of money we spend in conservation, it's a tiny, tiny fraction. So then we get a lot from nature. We got this kind of ecosystem services, we get free water, we get, you know, clean air, we get soil, and yet we don't spend in preserving those things.
Do you think even Malaysians, I mean the general public, isn't aware of this? I would have thought that Indonesia would be the place, just because of the vastness of that archipelago, or a country like Thailand or the Indo-Chinese countries, much more than the tiny little Malaysia.
Well, Malaysia is not so tiny, and Malaysia is so rich in terms of biodiversity. It's very interesting because many Malaysians tend to look around to the neighbors, to like Thailand for elephants or Indonesia for biodiversity. But Malaysia is so rich and fascinating that I think there's a very serious lack of awareness locally about the values of Malaysia. And I think Malaysia in the last couple of generations had been so focused on economic development, which was needed, and I think was very important, that it has detached a little bit from nature and from the roots. But what I'm seeing right now in Kuala Lumpur and, you know, especially in the urban areas, the youth are very keen on nature and conservation. And you just need to go around and go hiking and see how many young people are hiking every weekend. And our students at the university are really motivated, and they know a lot. So I think it's a very interesting time to get this new generation and get them to value and to be familiar with nature, because it's very important that they do. You know, it's in the best interest to protect nature and to protect, you know, the environment for the well-being.
Right. And coming back to the question of water resources, you said, you know, land is a state matter, but this is not just a question for Kedah, is it? It's a question also for Penang and Perlis.
Yeah.
Can there be a consensus, especially with the new political configuration, plus the question of the federal government, to push this conversation forward?
We hope so. I think in the case of Ulu Muda, it's a no-brainer. So then Ulu Muda produces all this water for these three estates. And you know how cheap is the water in Malaysia, right? So then I pay a water bill of around 10 ringgits per month. And I think Penang is the cheapest state in the whole of Malaysia in terms of the price of water. So we hope that this issue of water can be something that states can talk about, and they can try to have some agreement or to work together for the protection of the forest. But the key thing is that one state has the forest, and this forest generates the water that then is distributed to the states. But once that the water crosses the border and it comes into Penang, Penang say, well, this is my water. It's not Kedah's water, which is true, but it comes from Kedah. So I think we need to get the decision makers on the table and to discuss this very clearly, how we all benefit from this very, very cheap resource. But if we don't protect it, it's going to be much more expensive in the mid-long term.
Right, and one of the things that I learned in listening to the representative from Water Watch Penang was that 97% of our water comes from rivers. And we're clearly not looking after our rivers very well, because only about 30% of our rivers are actually designated clean rivers.
Yeah.
And 40% have problems, and the other 30% are just beyond the pale. They're probably dead rivers. So there's this connection, right? Elephants, habitats, water resources. What would you like people to remember, you know, kind of after this conversation about what's happening and what they can perhaps do, or what can the general public do?
Well, I guess the most important thing from this conversation is to understand that we have fantastic forests like Ulu Muda that people don't know about. So I would encourage people to Google it and see where it is, and maybe thinking about visiting one day. And we need to push for its protection. We need to you know, convey that message to our politicians and, you know, the decision makers. And I think we also need to be willing to pay more for things like our water. You know, 10 ringgits per month is very little for the service I get from my water. If we were willing to pay three times, four times more for water, and this money was done for conservation, I think we'll be better off in the long term. And maybe that's going to be everyone. Some people can pay more, some people can pay less. But I think we need to have this discussion of how much are we paying for these natural resources, and make sure that we manage it in a sustainable way.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Okay, see you.
I've been speaking to Professor Ahimsa Campos Athais. He's a professor of Environmental and Geographical Sciences at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. This has been Let's Talk. I'm Shahad Khadin, only for Astro Wani. Thank you.